I thought maybe I'd been wrong about how unappealing I'd seemed falling asleep sitting up. Maybe I'd been wrong about a lot. "Get some sleep," he said. And though it didn't sound bossy, it did sound invested. Like he'd just told me he had a stake in what happened to me, whether I reciprocated it or not. Then he waved and was off. I dropped immediately back down onto the couch, and Morgan and Marcus stood stock still, except for their eyes, which were madly telegraphing over my head. I buried my face in my hands. "Dude," Marcus said. "Dude," echoed Morgan. "Just, please don't say it," I said, my words muffled by my hands, and when I looked up, I was alone. 2 days later, I was laying down paint as fast as I could reload my brush, my eye one step ahead of my hand. I loved when it felt like this, as if the image was already there on the canvas and I was just filling it in. I'd been painting for hours, ever since we'd closed the shop at 10, and for the first time all week, Christopher hadn't shown up with sandwiches. "Damn," Morgan said around 9 when it became clear he wasn't coming. "I didn't plan dinner because I was counting on a delicious sandwich." She rounded on me and glared. "What'd you do?" "Nothing." I had kind of been wondering the same thing, though. "Maybe he just didn't end up with any extra sandwiches tonight," I'd offered, not meeting her eyes. "Girl, get a grip. That shit is made to order. Don't no one have extra sandwiches? He brings those damn things to have an excuse to hang out with your obtuse ass." "I know," I'd mumbled. I'd come upstairs hungry and tired and feeling vaguely guilty for whatever I'd done or failed to do that had broken Christopher's sandwich streak. The second I'd started to work, though, everything else had fallen away. I stepped back from the canvas a while later and stared at my own work. It always felt strange, like hearing your voice on an answering machine, the way it was familiar and alien. I felt exhilarated and exhausted, and I fell into bed without even brushing my teeth. The next morning, I woke before Robot Dog and had the petty satisfaction of turning him off before he got out even one bark. I'd painted until about 3 a.m., and my phone told me it was only 7:30. I wasn't sure why I'd woken up so early, but I wasn't going to argue with the extra time. It also told me I'd missed a call from my sister. Calling me at 7 a.m. when she knew I usually didn't get up until around 10 was completely like her. I made a mental note not to answer my phone without looking today. I pulled on clothes and was out the door in 2 minutes flat, unsure where I'd gotten my energy, and I was at Christopher's shop in another 5. But when I slid my sunglasses off, it wasn't Christopher I saw behind the counter. It was bespectacled lad. "Oh, hey, is Christopher here?" "It's Ginger, right?" I nodded. "No, he's not coming in today," the kid said. "What can I get you?" Disappointment shot through me, followed immediately by surprise at how much I'd been hoping he would be there. How much I'd wanted to hear his voice. If he'd been there, I could have told him I'd missed not seeing him last night. Asked if he was upset about something. My face felt hot, and I made the executive decision to ignore this new information because it was scary and uncomfortable. "Yes. Excellent strategy. Everything is fine. Nothing to see here." "Just a large coffee. Thanks." I walked out the door with my coffee. It tasted thin and weak after nearly 2 weeks of quad shots. The sound of someone banging on my door jolted me awake far too early. It wasn't the interior door, only accessible from the shop. It was the door in from the fire escape, which no one ever climbed except my landlord, John, and the occasional itinerant soul, hoping it led to the roof. And since the homeless folks never knocked, I was going to kill John. I stomped the 5 steps from the bed to the door and ripped it open. What the hell? But it wasn't John. It was Christopher.
"Oh, thank God. I thought maybe some dude with a baseball bat was going to answer."
I blinked at him stupidly. He didn't have a coat on, though it was chilly out. Just worn jeans and a maroon t-shirt. I wasn't sure why, but it got to me, that color. He always wore those three-in-a-bag V-neck t-shirts, but rather than plain black or white, his t-shirts were dark blue, maroon, forest green, dark brown, once a neon orange one. Weird colors, like he bought the ones no one wanted. They were the colors I imagined in a smoking lounge or the 19th century library of a posh British guy. Well, not the neon orange one. Usually we were seated, often with a counter between us, but now, standing this close to him, I was struck by his sheer physicality. He was a lot taller than me, maybe 6'1 or 6'2, with broad shoulders and the kind of effortless strength that came from regular physical work. I could see the tension in his muscles and the gold-dusted hue of his pale skin. He carried himself with the confidence of someone who knew what his body could do. I could imagine what he could do to me. Powerful arms pinning me against the wall of melt, or hoisting me onto the counter. Thick thighs spreading my legs as he pressed us together. But I could also imagine the colors I would use if I painted him. The creams and pinks, oranges and blues. His skin, his hair, his eyes. I blinked, overwhelmed by the beauty of how he was made up. And the realization that I wasn't quite sure how long I had been standing there, looking at him. Desire hit me. I thought about kissing his full mouth, about running my hands through his hair and mussing it. I thought about him a lot more than I'd wanted to. But my impulse now was to slide under his arm and wrap my arms around his waist, bury my nose in his neck, and inhale. It wasn't an impulse of lust, but unexpectedly of intimacy. His physical power was potent. But there was something in his expression that looked lost. "You didn't come in for coffee the last few days," he said finally. I put my hands on my hips. "Well, you didn't come into the shop." "Wow, Holtzman. Congratulations on sounding like a petulant 5-year-old. He sighed and turned to look out over the railing. Even though no one else used the fire escape, I stood out on it often. On the rare occasion that I had a night off, I'd watch the sun set. On the more common occasion when I hadn't gone to bed yet, I'd watch it rise. Christopher's profile was clean, striking. And now that I didn't have a convenient distraction, coffee, a bagel, a sandwich, my friends, I couldn't stop staring at it. "Can I maybe come in?" I gestured him in and locked the door. Just one sec, I said, suddenly aware of what I was wearing. I ducked into the bathroom and slid a bra on under my Kidney Thieves concert t-shirt that was so thrashed it was more hole than shirt. My long john bottoms weren't too bad, probably. I didn't even let myself glance in the mirror. When you woke someone up from a dead sleep, you had to deal with what they looked like. End of story. But I did quickly brush my teeth because it was impossible to talk to someone so gorgeous with my mouth tasting like something died. When I came back into the living room, Christopher was standing at the foot of my rumpled bed, looking at the painting that hung above it. It was a self-portrait, and stylistically, a lot like the work I was doing for the show in January. It was from behind and off to the side, mostly my hair, the short stubble exposing a glimpse of my ear and neck on one side, the curls spilling over my shoulder on the other.
"Is that you?"
"Yeah." I was aware that some people would find it the height of vanity to have a picture of yourself hung over your own bed like Jay-Z or a Kardashian, but Christopher's tone didn't seem to imply that he was one of them.
"It's gorgeous."
"Thanks." Then, aware that I was pulling a total Daniel by giving away no information whatsoever, I added, "I just really like the difference in textures. Long hair, buzzed hair, skin. It's interesting to paint. It's not that I'm totally obsessed with myself."
"Wait, you painted that? Holy shit."
He walked around the side of the bed and leaned in to look more closely.
"I thought it was a photograph. I seriously did." "Jesus,"
he murmured, long eyelashes nearly touching the canvas. When he turned to me, his eyes were intense.
"You're so damn talented," he said.
Then, before I could even say thank you,
"How come you stopped coming in for coffee?"
I liked the way he talked. Like, honesty cost him nothing.
"I got a coffee pot," I said. "Oh, bummer. I suppose I should have expected that eventually."
Currents and cross currents and undertows and fuck. It had been ages since I'd been in this place. This slow unfolding into another person's life. This delicate, tentative new attachment that demanded a kind of nurturing I wasn't used to giving. I knew we were at a crossroads. We'd been hovering around it the last few times we'd seen each other. That moment when you either acknowledged you were attracted to each other or let it go. Part of me thought I should just kiss the fuck out of him and avoid talking altogether. Unfortunately, he was way taller than me, so that would be less sexy spontaneity and more me dragging his head down like I was trying to get him in a stranglehold, which, that had possibilities of its own, but perhaps not for a first kiss. Besides, hadn't I already decided there was no chance this was happening? And yet, here Christopher was. I slumped down on the couch and rested my chin on my knees. He sat down next to me, slowly, like maybe it wasn't allowed. "So, listen," Christopher said, and while that was generally not the start to any comment that ended well, he didn't sound anxious or concerned. I looked at him warily, getting lost in the beautiful contrast of orange, gold, and blue of his eyes.
"Do you date men?"
Yeah. Well, I mean, not very successfully, but yes, in theory. Christopher grinned.
Okay, great.
I laughed at how delighted he looked. At least someone finds my lack of successful dating to be a positive.
Well, it's working out kind of well for me at the moment, so...
Huh. You sure about that? Bravado. Pure bravado. We were both leaning in slightly. And suddenly things shifted, like a picture filter had been stripped away. His eyes were on mine, and I could feel the energy simmering between us.
"No," he said slowly, "but I've been wrong before, and it hasn't killed me."
He looked at me, a slow, raking look, and I felt it like a physical touch. I wanted to come out with a comment like a knife to cut the tension that hummed between us, but I had nothing to say. The moment stretched on, and Christopher's lips parted slightly like he needed more air. Before I could talk myself out of it, before I could list the cons or evaluate the risk, I closed the distance between us and paused an inch away. His eyelashes fluttered closed. And he kept stock still. When my lips touched his, it was like lightning arcing between us. I wanted to sink into his kiss and never come up for air. Christopher groaned and slid a hand to the back of my neck, pulling me close and deepening the kiss. His tongue slid against mine, and his stubble roughened my face, shooting heat through my whole body. I was breathing heavily, my heart pounding with desire. I cupped his jaw and tried to memorize the heat of his mouth, the velvet slide of his tongue, the strength his hands and mouth promised, but held in check. I wanted to pull him down on top of me on the couch, feel the weight of him, spread my legs and see if he was as affected by our kiss as I was. But that was what I always did. I slept with someone, and then I either felt awkward around them or I lost interest. And I didn't want that with Christopher. I wanted the opposite. It was scary, now that I let myself be aware of it, how much I wanted him. I broke the kiss reluctantly at that thought, my heart pounding now for a far less pleasant reason. I pulled just far enough away that I could see every detail of Christopher's face. His pupils were blown wide, eyes heavy-lidded, cheeks flushed. We breathed heavily, inches apart.
God,
he murmured finally, pulling back and running a hand through his hair. Suddenly, the world rushed back in, everything overly loud. My brain started cataloging the sounds. Hum of the refrigerator, beep of a truck backing up, plane flying overhead, car radio, shouts from the street, a cell phone ringing. Then Christopher's face fractured into pieces, the way I saw figures when I tattooed or painted them. A collection of lines, planes, colors, angles, textures that I could catalog and render, and that was familiar. That was manageable. Do you have to open the shop? I asked. My voice sounded rough and uncertain. Christopher kept looking at me, seeming dazed. When he registered my question, though, he looked suddenly sheepish.
No. Stevie's got it.
I raised my eyebrows.
I don't actually open every day. Usually, I just...
He ran a hand over his face.
Well, I was dropping stuff off the day we met, and then I thought maybe you'd come back, and then you did, so I wanted to be there. So...
Whoa. I couldn't stop myself from smiling at that. That was sweet as hell. And if I'd been in his position, no way would I have admitted it.
Yeah.
He drawled the word self-consciously.
It turns out I actually really like opening, though. I like seeing the neighborhood wake up. And early mornings when all the cool regulars come in, like the 80-year-olds who've been living in the same spot for 50 years. So, there's that.
I just thought you were one of those ridiculous morning people.
Well, I can be. I'm versatile.
He winked. It was playful and flirtatious, but now that I knew how incendiary our chemistry was, I would never think of his winks the same way again. So, the other day when you weren't there, you just weren't there? It wasn't because... I rolled my eyes at myself so hard because, Jesus, could I have jumped to a more self-absorbed conclusion? I was kind of rude to you the night before at the shop. Because I did come in.
Stevie told me.
He smiled and ran the backs of his knuckles over my cheek. We were still in kissing distance, and I shivered at his touch. He slid his hand to my shoulder. There was a rip in the seam of my t-shirt. So I could feel the heat of his hand against my skin.
No, it was actually... My older brother, he's coming back to town to stay with my parents for a little while. We're not sure when exactly, but that's where I was the other morning. At my parents', helping them get some stuff ready for him. Besides, I was starting to feel a little weird about coming to the shop every night. Your friends looked at me like I was kind of pathetic.
What? No way, dude. They love you. And not just because of the sandwiches. They were probably looking at you with pity because you were being nice and they know me.
Oh, yeah? What do they know about you that's so awful?
He reached his hand out and gently ran a finger down a lock of my hair, the curl springing away. I traced the finger over his eyebrow. We were learning each other in small, manageable pieces, mapping each new inch of terrain slowly to see how far into each other's territory we could venture. Not awful, just they could see that I was acting all weird and awkward with you.
You didn't seem awkward to me, just a little annoyed.
The hand on my shoulder moved down my arm, raising every hair as it went.
Well, you don't really know me very well. I want to, he said.
His eyes were on mine, and his voice was rough with desire. The simple sweetness of it rang through me like a bell. And then I thought of how Christopher liked knowing his customers' coffee orders and like bringing people the sandwiches they'd want. Could that be all this was? The interest of someone who was interested in everyone? The possibility hurt worse than I expected it to. Why? I found myself asking. Because I had to know it wasn't that. I had to know I wasn't having actual feelings for someone who was just a really nice, flirtatious guy who liked to make everyone feel good. Christopher sat for a minute while he seemed to consider the question. Then he said, "Did you ever find a new band or author or director or something, and you were instantly fascinated? You heard one song and wanted to get all the rest of their stuff. Sure, you didn't know what it'd be, and yeah, you probably weren't going to like every single second of it the exact same way you liked the bit you just found, but you can just tell from the part you found that you want to know the rest." I nodded. I knew just what he meant. The spark of connection that made you feel like someone's art was speaking directly to you, that made you feel that no matter how others received it, it was different from what it meant to you. The desire to see more of the mind that created what you connected with, because surely there was something akin. He shrugged. "I just know that I like the bits of you I've seen. And I want to see the rest." He said it sincerely, but then his face turned red as he realized what that sounded like, especially with us still so close on the couch, and he rolled his eyes. I laughed. I thought back to a conversation I'd had with Daniel before his first date with Rex, in which I told him to be his actual self, to be the way he was with me instead of with the rest of the world. He'd gotten all offended and asked what that meant, and I told him that with other people he was guarded, quick to throw down. He'd be endlessly amused to hear that I was now giving myself the exact same advice. I said, "Your bits aren't so bad either. I wouldn't mind seeing what else you've got going on." "Yeah." His face lit up. "Yeah. I'm not great at... So when I was in sixth grade, I had a crush on this boy, Jason. And like five of my other friends had crushes on him too, because, you know, he was dreamy or whatever. But even though they'd talk about how cute he was or liking him, I would never admit that I did too. It felt too vulnerable. As if, as long as I hadn't admitted that I liked Jason, then his rejection wasn't really rejection. No one would know. No one would feel sorry for me, you know? He nodded slowly.
"But what if Jason actually did like you?
Huh?
What if he really liked you, and he thought you didn't like him?"
"Oh, yeah, well, that turned out to be what happened. He asked me out at lunch one day, and I thought it was a joke, but he said he was serious, so then we were dating." I made finger quotes around dating, which basically meant nothing. Of course, then one Monday I got to school, and everyone was saying that this girl Caitlin gave him a handjob in the woods. I added absently because, wow, apparently it was nervous oversharing hour on the Ginger Show.
"I'm not a cheater,"
Christopher said, eyes flashing. "Yeah, no, I didn't mean it like that. That actually wasn't the point. The point was that I'm pretty bad at doing things that make me feel like I'm leaving myself open for a hit, you know?" His expression softened.
"I've definitely gotten that, yeah."
Christopher leaned in and cupped my cheek, looking at me closely. My heart started pounding, my vision narrowed to only his mouth, full lips slightly parted, stubble gleaming like copper in the sun. Heat bloomed low in my belly and burned between my legs. I wanted to squeeze my thighs together at the delicious feeling. If he kissed me again, I wasn't sure I'd be able to stop.
"So, I have to go,"
he said, voice low, eyes on my mouth. He got an amused, teasing look on his face.
"But I think we've done good work here today."
He shook my hand like we concluded a business transaction, the cocky little shit. And I wanted to kiss that look right off his face. "You're a tease," I said, surprised.
"I work with what I have, Ginger,"
he said, and he pressed a hot kiss to my cheek. "This is going to be an absolute disaster," I said, squeezing his hand. but I felt suffused with a warmth I hadn't felt in a very long time. Just for none of the reasons I thought.
Christopher. Jay. Okay, it's cool if you don't want to write me back every time, but you know I'm not going to stop, right? So I really hope you haven't become claustrophobic, because I think Mom and Dad have turned into hoarders. I don't know how I never noticed it before, but swear to God, they have kept every single thing we ever did. Every piece of paper and postcard and old toy and soccer trophy and, it's all stacked into this weird wall of nostalgia in your bedroom. So, gird your loins for your return, prodigal son, because I think if you try and move even one thing, the entire wall could come tumbling down. I tried to get Mom to throw that shit out, I swear, but she gave me the how could you look, and I, you know, I can't take that shit. So then I tried to move a lot of it into my old room, but I guess the roof's leaking in there. Sorry, man, I tried. I have confirmed that Ginger does indeed date guys, so that's something. Bro, her paintings are out of this world amazing. I don't even get how someone's brain would have to work to be able to do that. To see the details of a thing rather than the thing itself. Or to see them both at the same time, like the world is some kind of magic eye poster and you can constantly shift between seeing the details and seeing the whole. I can almost see her doing it sometimes. Seeing me and then cocking her head and seeing me differently, like she's taking a picture in her mind. She actually reminds me of you, well, a little bit. She has this way of talking where things are kind of a joke, but I know she means it, the way you do. Like your shrink used to say, right? That one with the big teeth and the terrible comb-over. See. P.S. She kissed me. I'm grinning as I write this, because I can't stop grinning every time I think about it. God, I'm a geek. But if you want to know the story, then you should probably write me back.
Chapter 6.
Okay, so here's the deal,
Christopher said, leaning across the counter toward me.
I want to go on a date with you.
I'd spent the whole previous day after Christopher left my apartment getting lost in thoughts about how his mouth felt against mine, imagining what would have happened if he'd stayed, making bets with myself about what the skin of his shoulders would taste like. Or how his stubble would feel on my inner thighs. Then I forced myself to come into Melt this morning, because I'd known if I stayed away, I'd start to feel awkward. But the idea of a date made me feel awkward for much less pleasant reasons. Dates always felt forced and overly scripted, and I never felt like myself on them. And I didn't want to not be myself with Christopher. Besides, it seemed like the perfect occasion for him to realize he wasn't actually into me. I shot him a faux shocked look and gestured around us to the empty cafe where we were currently sharing coffee and conversation. My sleeves were pulled down over my hands, so the gesture probably looked a bit like I'd pulled loose from a straitjacket.
Yeah, a date that does not take place within the walls of the establishment where either of us are the proprietor. Agreed?
Well, agreed in theory, but I work until late and you open the shop early, so I don't know when we'd do it. Besides, just know that in my world, the D-word portends disaster, and I thought things were going kind of well, so be warned.
What disaster could it portend?
Sweet, innocent angel. I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. He grinned and shook his head.
Come on a date with me. Tomorrow, 7 a.m. I'll get Stevie to open for me.
7 in the morning.
So you're skating past disaster and straight into torture?
Ginger. He took my hand, pushed up my sleeve, and ran warm fingers over the inside of my wrist. He traced the ink around to the back of my hand.
Come to breakfast with me. That morning glory. It'll be great.
Why is it so important to you that we go have a date in a diner rather than here? I asked, genuinely curious. I mean, truth, Morning Glory has better breakfast food than you, but... I winked at him, and he raised a hand to his heart like I'd wounded him.
Because I want to take you out on a real date?
Paging tautology, party of one.
Fine, okay. Because I want to kiss you again. Okay? There.
My eyes shot to his mouth. Soft lips, surrounded by rough stubble. The way the tips of his incisors bit into his bottom lip when he smiled. Heat flushed through me. What does that have to do with a date? I asked dazedly, and looked up into his eyes to find them trained on my mouth, too. He stepped around the counter and was in front of me in seconds. His broad chest pressed me back against the counter, and suddenly my senses were overwhelmed by him. His scent was all around me, something green like aloe. The clean, cool scent of fabric softener, the spice of whatever he used in his hair, and the smell of his skin. Warm and slightly musky.
You're right, he said, voice soft and low.
He cupped my cheek and touched my lower lip with his thumb. Huh?
I said stupidly, but I wasn't listening to him.
His eyes were like fire and water together. Some impossible conflagration. His lashes dark, reddish-brown. When his lips touched mine, his eyes fluttered shut, and I felt a wave of tenderness for him. Then it was replaced with heat as our mouths moved together. Slow, at first. But then he made a sound in the back of his throat and leaned into me, sliding his hand into my hair like he couldn't get close enough. My heart beat faster, and the kiss sent shivers down my throat and into my stomach. I pushed up onto my tiptoes and threw my arms around his neck. In the space of one breath, he groaned, grabbed me around the hips, and lifted me up so I was sitting on the counter. I hooked my calf around his thigh, pulling him toward me. He tipped my chin back and kissed me again. A deep, slow kiss. That gave me time to feel the softness of his lips and the sharpness of his teeth. The slick tease of his tongue against mine. I made a sound in the back of my throat as heat ripped through me and felt his answering arousal and the hardness pressed against my stomach. We were lost in each other. The shop disappeared as Christopher took over all my sensations. We broke apart suddenly at the sound of tinkling bells.
His mother? Marcus cracked up.
The look on Christopher's face when his mother walked through the door had been priceless. He'd retreated behind the counter immediately to hide his erection, but he couldn't hide his flushed cheeks or mussed hair. He'd cleared his throat and tried to go back into grown-up mode, introducing me to his mom and telling me he'd see me later, but he hadn't quite been able to pull it off.
So what does Daniel have to say about all this?
My stomach tightened. I haven't told him yet.
What? Why?
I've been asking myself the same thing. Usually I'd have told him right away. Usually it would be no big deal to text Daniel, hot guy alert, also tried a new granola bar flavor. But telling Daniel about this hot guy felt momentous. It felt like admitting that I maybe just a little bit kind of had a crush. More than a crush. It meant making it real. Marcus's expression was pained, like he could see my train of thought. This thing with Christopher will probably blow up in my face at any moment. Let's be real. He cares about stuff like making people happy, and he's got real parents, and he's at peace with the world or something, you know?
This is bad?
Come on. The only people at peace with the world are either too stupid to know any better, they're sociopaths devoid of empathy, or they're self-deluded, privileged fuckers who are fundamentally incapable of acknowledging reality. And let me just say, he ain't stupid. I don't know. He probably wants normal person things like meatloaf and peas and children and I don't know. Never mind.
I'm ignoring you, because I know you aren't really that shallow.
Also, he tweaked my hair knowingly,
because don't forget that I know you love meatloaf and peas. but your secret's safe with me. Come on, go on a date with me,
Christopher texted the next day after we'd finally exchanged phone numbers.
I kind of dig the whole hiding secret notes in napkins and climbing fire escapes at the crack of dawn to be in touch and all, but it's convenient to be able to let you know if I'm running late or dead in a car accident, he'd said.
Yeah, I'll hold my breath for your future calls from beyond the grave, I'd told him, but programmed his number into my phone and been pleased when he'd put me in as Ginger, with no last name needed. Not that it was a common name or anything, but still. I thought the whole making out on the counter of his diner might have convinced him that there was no need for a formalized date, but apparently I wasn't that lucky. And maybe with Christopher, going on a date would be different. Maybe.
What'd you have in mind? It's a surprise, winky face.
Surprises frighten me. They usually involve insects, public humiliation, or stand-up comedy. Actually, those last two are the same thing. In case it isn't clear, I hate insects and stand-up comedy. If you take me to one of those zoos that's for bugs or to a stand-up show, I will never speak to you again.
Hand to God, it's not stand-up, and there are no bugs. But why do you hate?
Because they crawl inside you and eat your brain. Well, more like because they're all secretive and hidden, and then they jump out at you.
I meant why do you hate stand-up, but point taken. I really don't like those water bug things.
Shudder?
No, those are terrible.
Most art allows for a variety of responses. Comedy tells you the one response you're supposed to have.
Well, maybe it's just not art, then.
You're telling me. If you don't have that one reaction, then it feels like it fails. And I don't like watching people fail at stuff in front of a crowd.
But it doesn't always fail.
Gritting my teeth while sitting surrounded by people, staring at a stage, knowing there's a 97% possibility that it will fail for me. Emoji.
Okay, got it. Not your thing. No comedy, no bugs, no problem. Winky face.
Rainbow vomit emoji. Also, it makes me uncomfortable to see people try so hard to be liked. Middle school flashbacks of shame by proxy. Full body shivers of horror.
Noted. I will never, ever subject you to comedy.
But real talk. Was it going to be comedy?
No. Jesus, fine, I'll just tell you.
Angel with a halo emoji.
Do you want me to?
Okay, keep your surprise. When?
Friday night. Can you get done early enough to meet me at 8?
Can't, Friday. Going to NYC. Tattoo convention. The convention was coming at a bad time, what with Malik's art show looming and the extra business from the G Philly article. But I hadn't known about either when I'd signed up for it last year. I was looking forward to meeting up with tattoo friends. I only saw at cons, though. And I had two people I was going to see if I could hire for small change.
Oh, bummer. When are you back?
Sunday p.m.?
Okay. Well, I'll try you again next week, I guess.
Would it help you to make up an emoji? Leering, vaguely patronizing emoji that I'm using to distract from an uncomfortably sappy feeling of being glad that you're bummed I'm not here this weekend. See?
okay. Patient on the surface, but agitated at the thought of not hanging with you this weekend emoji. How'd I do?
That's a description of a feeling, not an emoji.
Dang. Harsh.
How about twiddling my thumbs and sighing while pacing my sandwich shop emoji?
Aw. Better, I guess.
More visually dynamic, in any case. But twiddling is kind of creepy, because diddling...
Noted. Got it.
Then he sent me a picture of himself making a face like he was weeping and pining. Then another of him winking. I fell into bed Sunday night completely exhausted and aching in every muscle. After spending 3 straight days tattooing from early morning until late at night, networking during every minute of downtime, and hardcore socializing over drinks with friends, my hands were claws, my back a knot of pain, my head and eyes throbbed, and my brain was oatmeal. pleading with me in a tiny voice not to make it see or speak to anyone for at least a week.
If oatmeal could plead. I had managed a quick voicemail to the shop phone that Lindsay would find when they opened, saying that I was taking the day off and not to come get me unless the shop was actually on fire. I slept until noon, took the hottest shower I could stand, then sat on the couch with a cup of coffee in one hand and a bowl of coffee ice cream in the other, dipping spoonfuls of ice cream into the coffee to make tiny floating islands that I devoured one after another like a capricious god. I should have been working on my paintings, but I was finding it difficult even to reach over to deposit my empty bowl on the coffee table. When was the last time I'd taken a day off? Not since before Daniel left, I didn't think. I'd give it 10 more minutes, and then I was going to paint. Really, I should have done something useful like go to the grocery store or do laundry, but those were absolutely not happening. I sketched absently on the back of an envelope from the bank. As I sketched, my mind drifted to Christopher. He texted me a few times while I was in New York, but though each text had put a smile on my face and kindled a warmth in my stomach, I'd always been gloved up and covered in blood and ink when they came through, so I hadn't answered. I grabbed my phone to text him back when I realized what I'd sketched was him, in three-quarter profile, like he was turning toward me. The blade of his nose catching the light, the cut of his cheekbone throwing a shadow, the curve of his brow above those extraordinary eyes. Jeez. Hung up much, Holtzman? Distracted by my sketch and what it might mean, when the phone suddenly rang in my hand, I accidentally swiped to answer the call without looking, because God knew I would never have answered a call from my sister intentionally. Ginger, finally. I've called you 1,000 times. Yeah. Very early in the morning, when you knew I'd still be asleep, so I find myself questioning the sincerity of your desire to talk to me, sis. Most people grow out of sleeping until noon after their hormones stabilize, you know. My sister had the same ability to irritate me now as she had when she was a know-it-all teenager. She and my mother were twin engines of passive aggression and judgment, and nothing I've ever tried had the power to bring down the plane. So, mostly I just did the only thing I could, and refused to take them seriously. Well, I guess I'm just permanently unstable, I told her cheerfully. So, what can this unresponsive, unstable sleep addict do for you? Well, obviously, I need to know what you want to do about Thanksgiving. My sister had this way of speaking like she worried that if she didn't really hit the important words hard, that no one would understand what she was saying. Oh, of course, obviously. I rolled my eyes. What do you mean, do about it? Aren't you guys going to Uncle Saul and Aunt Joe's as usual? That's what I've been trying to discuss with you if you'd ever answer your phone. Uncle Saul had some kind of cardiac episode or something. I don't know. And so we can't just ask Aunt Joe to go ahead as if everything is normal. Okay, well, why don't you just invite them to Mom and Dad's? It's just asking an awful lot of Mom, don't you think? Well, I'm not asking for anything from Mom because I don't even know if I'm coming. Thought, have you asked Mom what she wants to do? Of course, but you know Mom. She'll say she's happy to do it, but she'll stress over the whole thing. Yeah, Eva, I do know Mom. And that's how I know, as do you, that she's going to stress over everything no matter what. So just ask her. She's an adult. If she says she wants to do it, then she'll do it. And if she doesn't want to, she can say that. Though she wouldn't. My mother and my sister were allergic to saying what they meant. There was always some ulterior motive, always some prize for something lurking behind what was said, even if they were the only ones who knew what it was. I'd stopped playing along years ago, but even opting out had its price. It implied complicity. You have somewhere you'd rather be, I assume, as usual. It had been years since I'd spent Thanksgiving with my family. Usually Daniel and I hung out together, or I kept the shop open late, since there were always people seeking refuge from their own families. This year, I would probably just hang out at home by myself. It seemed nice to take a breather. I didn't answer fast enough, though. Mom and Dad won't be around forever, you know, Eva continued. If you ever bothered to call them, then you would know that Dad's not doing that well.
A bolt of panic shot through me. Somehow I'd never considered the possibility that I needed to worry about my parents. My mother seemed too mean to die, and my father wouldn't dare without my mother's permission. Even though I didn't get along with my family, the thought of losing them had shaken me. What? What's wrong with Dad? Well, I don't know, Ginger. She spat my name out, and I wondered if she'd just made that comment to needle me. Seriously, but what the fuck? Is something wrong or not? She sighed in this long, suffering way that my mother may as well have copyrighted. You know, it would be nice if you could pretend you cared about Mom and Dad, Eva said, and I could practically picture her nose up in the air. Yeah, it'd be nice if they actually cared about me, I muttered. Well, it's not like you really make it easy for them, though, do you? And there it was, the harsh reality that there was no such thing as unconditional love. There was only acting in ways that made people decide you were worthy of it. I don't really think my job is to make myself easy to like, I bit off. It had been the hardest lesson to learn, taken the longest to believe, since everything insisted the opposite. I still had to repeat it in my head sometimes, and even then it didn't always work. Yes, well, we all know how well that's turned out for you, Eva sniffed. And that was me at capacity. I had to hang up before I got caught in the quicksand of Eva. Okay, well, my customer's here. I gotta go. I lied. Just think about Mom and Dad for once, okay? Eva said as I ended the call. I dropped the phone on the couch, suddenly exhausted. It was the typical Eva effect. I gave myself 10 minutes to stare into space and sulk. I was over changing who I was to try and make my parents happy. Had been for years. But the fact that I'd stopped trying didn't mean I ever stopped wishing things were different. My mom had always found fault with everything I did, with everything I was. The things I most valued in myself, my strength, my outspokenness, my self-possession, she demeaned. To her, I wasn't strong, I was rude and thoughtless. I wasn't outspoken, I was antagonistic and embarrassing. I wasn't self-possessed, I was a misfit rebelling because she wished for acceptance. And whenever I allowed myself to hope that my father might come to my defense, might see something positive in me where she saw only faults, I'd been disappointed. I wasn't sure if he actually agreed with her or simply refused to argue, but it didn't really matter. The effect was the same. At 10, I'd been confused by their lack of approval. At 13, I'd been hurt. At 16, I'd been furious. And at 20... resigned. These days, I'd like to think I saw them more clearly than they saw me. But the truth was, it was infuriatingly easy for them to get in my head sometimes. To hear my mother's voice as I looked at myself in the mirror, or my father's silence as I searched for a dissenting opinion. It had been different for Eva. She always cared what my mother thought and fit in with it. And the parts of her that didn't fit... I wagered she'd slough them off as systematically as I'd encouraged mine to show themselves. I forced myself to shrug off thoughts of my family, throw on jeans and a threadbare skinny puppy concert tee, and drag myself downstairs to check on the shop to see if there was anything I needed to take care of after my weekend absence. Hey, Marcus said, looking up from tattooing text on a woman's ribs. How was it? Exhausting, I sighed. But not bad. The tattooing was great, though my hands are officially dead. I knew what he was most waiting to hear about, though. Neither Sheila or Eliza D are going to work out, Em. I'm really sorry. Marcus made a face. Shoot. How come? How come what? Morgan asked, sliding into the desk chair to run her customer's credit card. I sighed and picked up my nail polish. I hated to disappoint them. Sheila was going to move to Philly in a few months, but I guess her kid got into some super special arts school in Denver, so she's not going to leave now. Liza D was looking really promising, because since she and her wife split, she seemed kind of jazzed to get out of New York for part of the week, but she says she can't deal with the commute, especially since in the winter she'd maybe get stuck here or there and miss clients or be stranded, etc. I don't blame her, Morgan said as her client thanked her and left. I wouldn't want to either.
Yeah, I know, me neither.
I just really thought she'd fit in here. Both of them would have. We sat in dismayed silence for a minute.
Oh, one good thing, though.
Eddie Sparks came to my booth and was really into my work. And not just the tattoos, but my paintings as well. He took some postcards and said he'd definitely be in touch, which it may never happen, but it'd be great exposure for the shop. Morgan and Marcus both gritted their teeth, and I realized that I'd essentially just said in one breath that we were about to get busier and that we didn't have any backup.
Great.
The door opened, breaking the tense silence, and Christopher walked in, phone in one hand and a coffee in the other. He seemed surprised to see me.
Hey, I was just about to text you to see if I could come up, he said. I brought coffee in the hopes that I could bribe you.
Girl, Morgan said softly and shook her head. Christopher looked pleased with himself. He held out the coffee like a morsel to lure a skittish cat close, and when I took it, he slid a hand around my shoulder and bent to kiss my cheek, his stubble a welcome scritch, his smell delicious. He was wearing black jeans and an olive t-shirt under his navy peacoat. I liked when he wore green because it made his hair and eyes look even brighter. "Where do you get your shirts?" I asked. He narrowed his eyes.
"Is this a sartorial intervention?"
Marcus laughed.
"Ginger thinks people should wear whatever they want at all times, so I strongly doubt it."
I dipped a curtsy, holding out the hem of my oversized shirt so the concert dates of the Too Dark Park tour stretched around me.
Yeah, no, I like them, I said. They're just unusual colors for those kind of undershirts, and it's like this mystery I've wondered about ever since I met you.
He leaned against the counter and smiled a little.
A mystery, huh? Maybe I shouldn't reveal my secrets. So what possibilities have you considered?
I ticked them off on my fingers. That you used to work at a t-shirt factory and could take home free ones. That you have some extreme form of color blindness and have gone through life thinking they're all black this whole time. That you once killed a man in a white t-shirt and as you watched his blood stain the fabric, you swore an oath never to wear another white shirt until the end of time. That you just like the colors?
Wow, he said, shaking his head. I didn't think anyone would ever guess the truth about that blood oath.
Morgan snorted.
I had a roommate years ago who used to buy these big packs of the white undershirts at one of those box stores. He wore them every day, under everything. But for some reason, the brand he bought always came with one colored shirt, maybe to get you to buy more colors, so you'd forget it was in there and wash them all together, ruining the white ones and forcing you to buy more. No clue. But he wouldn't wear them, and I kind of liked them, so he just gave them to me. We lived together for 3 years, and he went through those damn shirts like Kleenex, so I have a lot.
I grinned. That was fucking adorable. Not as dramatic as the blood oath, I said, shaking my head in faux disappointment.
Few things are.
That was New York. Morgan's next client came in, and I maneuvered Christopher to the side so we weren't blocking the counter. That was pretty good. Mostly I'm just totally zonked, and even though I slept a lot, I kind of want to go back to bed.
Do you want me to go?
He asked.
I was mostly kidding about bribing you with the coffee. You can keep it,
he said, laughing because I'd instinctively pulled the cup close to me like he might take it back. His smile was quickly becoming one of my favorite things to see. His laugh, one of my favorite to hear. Did I want him to go? I was peopled out, but I found myself really wanting him to stay. I shrugged, and the neck of my t-shirt fell off one shoulder. I'm just tired, and I talked to my shithead sister before you got here, which means I'm maybe not the best company, so you might not want to hang out with me.
I think I can stand it, if you can.
His voice was soft. Then he ran a hand over my hair, then let his warm palm rest on my exposed shoulder. Okay. For a little bit? He nodded, and I led him upstairs. As soon as we got there, though, I realized the flaw in my plan. It was hard to just hang out and not talk when you had a small sofa and no TV. If Christopher were Daniel, we'd squeeze onto the couch and watch a movie on my laptop, or I'd put on a record and we'd lie on the floor, chatting only when we felt like it. But Christopher took up a lot more space on the couch than Daniel, and I didn't really want to watch a movie. I had stopped just inside the door. "Want me to hug you?" Christopher asked from behind me. "What?" He shifted his weight from foot to foot. "Well, sometimes I like a hug when I'm tired or grumpy, so I thought maybe you would too." "You? Grumpy? Yeah, right." Christopher shot me a bright smile, proving my point. "You like hugs, huh?" I scowled, wondering who got to hug Christopher when he was tired, or if he were ever grumpy, and felt a tiny twinge in my stomach at the idea of someone else's arms wrapped around him.
"I do. Well, I like good ones."
"And do you give good ones?"
"Well, I don't know if you'll think so, but if I were in the market for a hug, I would definitely want a hug from me. Care to register an opinion?"
He dropped his arms at his sides, like he was making himself ready for any potential hugging. It was kind of silly, but the second he'd said it, I realized that maybe I did want a damn hug. He did look like he'd give good ones. He was broad and strong, but not hard with muscle. He smelled good and was wearing a soft fabric. He didn't have any spiky jewelry that I could see. I nodded and stepped into his arms, where I found myself wrapped up in probably the best hug I'd ever gotten. He held me to his chest tightly, but didn't squeeze the life out of me. He leaned into the hug like he was enjoying it, not doing me a favor, and he rested his chin on top of my head. I turned my face so my cheek was against the flat of his shoulder and let out a huge breath, relaxing into the shape of his body. I could feel the expansion of his stomach and chest as he breathed, the heat of his skin through that damn green t-shirt. The muscles of his back shifted slightly under my palms as he tipped his head forward and buried his face in my hair. I'd hug Daniel occasionally, but it was always quick and fierce. Morgan and Lindsay on their birthdays, Marcus when one of us had had a hard day. But this kind of hug? Where I just held someone and they held me? Where we breathed together as one unit? I couldn't remember the last time it had happened. Christopher smelled amazing, and the rhythm of his breath was lulling. I let go reluctantly when it seemed like an inappropriately long time had gone by, and he looked a little disappointed. He trailed a hand down my arm, like he was reluctant to break contact, and I leaned into it.
"So, what's the deal with your sister?"
She called and I accidentally answered. He raised an eyebrow in question. "Oh, just, you know, planning Thanksgiving and Ginger, why don't you at least pretend you care about Mom and Dad bullshit?"
"You don't get along with your parents?"
I sighed and kicked off my shoes, sinking onto my bed. Christopher raised his eyebrows in question and I patted the bed next to me. "No, not really. It's kind of a choice to avoid them at this point, because they always just wanted me to be someone I was never going to be. When I was younger, I tried, for a while. But nothing that ever felt like me made them proud or happy, and nothing that made them proud or happy ever felt like me.